أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله
As-salamu alaykum. Peace be unto you. We're back for another episode of Islam in Focus. We have our 32nd program in our series dealing with the sources of Islam. Today we'll be discussing the topic of the contents of the Quran as a manifestation of its source. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid, and I have joining me on the program as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, as-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah.
Can we begin today's program perhaps with a brief comment as to how this program relates to the present series that we've been doing dealing with the sources of Islam?
Okay, well, in the beginning we said that sources of Islam in the first place really is dependent heavily on the Quran, the word of Allah. And so far in this last 31 program, we have been dealing with one single question, as to how do we know that the Quran actually is the word of Allah, not written by Prophet Muhammad, not copied or adapted from previous teachers or scriptures. And we have approached the answer to that question from a number of angles, from the historical point of view, logical. We have talked about the scientific challenge in the Quran that shows again that the Prophet would have not known this information, which shows that it came from the Creator. We approach that from the linguistic standpoint, that the style of the Quran is totally unimitatable and there's absolutely nothing that comes close to it, which again reflect on its source. And so far really we have been dealing with something about the Quran rather than the content of the Quran itself. So perhaps it might be useful to examine also the content of the Quran as a clear evidence, a clear manifestation that it actually was revealed from Allah, that the kind of concepts that we find in the Quran, in the variety of topics that it deals with, could not have emanated from any single human being and could not be improved upon to start with, because again, perfection can only emanate from the Creator, and this is the theme really of this particular program.
Well, perhaps we could begin with an examination of some of the issues that you've raised, beginning with the conception about God or Allah. In what sense is the Quran the ultimate explanation in your view?
Well, to me, one reason why I believe the Quran could have not been authored by any human, that it emanated really from the Creator, is the fact that when you look into the Quran as to how it explained the notion or the concept or conception about God or Allah, you notice that it's something that really strikes a chord with the upright human nature and human instinct, if you will. All humans, regardless of the location where they are born or live, have this instinctive, natural, innate feeling of the existence of the Creator. The Quran makes several references to that and capitalize on them. But not only does the Quran speak about the existence of high or the supreme being, it avoids the deviations, aberrations, or errors that has taken place throughout history in trying to understand that supreme being, or to try to understand something about him, because you can never understand his essence. On one hand, we find that the Quran rejects the notion of denial of the existence of the supreme being, or the claims that everything was created just by chance. And the Quran makes the appeal even to the skeptic, emphasizing over and over again the unity in the laws and natural operation of the universe. And that's something again that science has been discovering more and more, that there is some central organization and interconnectedness between the various aspects of creation. And of course, if you have this unity in creation, then it must have emanated also from the one God who has no one sharing with him
any other will or any other responsibility. So that's the concept of monotheism in Islam is stemming, is a scientific concept, if you will. It's based on this human deduction that we can easily relate to. It avoided also another deviation of another sort, the belief in the more than one God or polytheism, because again it relates to the same issue that if you have one God for good and one God for evil, like in dualism, you can't really have coordination in the universe. If you have so many gods, then you have so many wills, so many ultimate wills, and this cannot be reconcilable. So in that sense, it is not just monotheism, it's, you know, monotheism that anyone, regardless of his level of understanding, can relate to and find a sort of positive reaction to. And again, the Quran constantly emphasizes this principle. It avoids the aberration in history in trying to materialize God or perceive of the Creator in some physical form, whether that form is an animate or inanimate object. The Quran over and over again negates various notions of idolatry or taking icons representing God or believing in some heavenly bodies as having any divine power like the sun, the moon or the stars, avoiding the belief in God as incarnating in some human or physical or animal form, avoiding all deviations such as the worship of saints or human beings, even if they were prophets, great as they might have been. The Quran is quite clear on that. It leaves no confusion in the mind of the reader. On the other hand, we find also the various notions that existed throughout history and maybe still exist until today of admitting monotheism in some form but not really perfect form, while believing in the same time of some intermediaries who have the authority and power to act between the human and the Creator. And the Quran is very clear, again, there is nothing called minor gods or demigods or intermediaries between man and God, because it's either the Creator and the creatures, but there is nothing really in between. In general, we can find that the Quran emphasizes also the proper attributes of the Creator. On one hand, there is the emphasis on the transcendence of the Creator, that he cannot be similar to any of his creatures, which is very sensible from the standpoint of even the scientific mind. On the other hand, it does not present Allah or God as some vague, remote concept, but as a personal God to whom we relate. The Quran emphasizes frequently the personal or close relationship with the Creator, the attributes of mercy and forgiveness, as much as the attributes of might and greatness and absolute will and power. So there is no lack of balance between transcendence and personality or closeness to the Creator. The Quran emphasizes the universality of the Creator. And again, you compare that with other forms that some people believe are also monotheistic, you find there's a big difference. There is nowhere in the Quran that you find an analogous to God of Israel, for example. There is nothing called God of Quraysh or God of the Arabs or Muslims, always speaking about the God of the universe, the God or Lord of the entire mankind from the beginning to the end of the Quran. And that makes the call of the Quran a universal, a noble, lofty type of notion that all human beings can unite around and relate to easily. This is something that makes Islamic monotheism something which is consistent with the human nature, and one feels that it could have not emanated from any thought of any human being, because it touches the person on the spiritual level, on the intellectual level, and one can easily establish the relationship with the Creator on the basis of both the respect and the fear of displeasing the Creator, as well as the hope for his forgiveness and his mercy, and ultimately the relationship of love and submission to the Creator. Again, I don't think that any human being or any philosophy can really measure up to that standard and that purest form of monotheism that appear in the Quran, which again shows to me its divine source.
Mm-hmm. The question of prophethood and revelation is another related issue. Mm-hmm. What, in your view, is distinctive about the Quranic explanation?
Well, to start with, the Quran makes it clear that the fundamentals of the faith can never be contradictory between one time and the other, or one generation or the other, because the source of all revelation is the Creator himself. The Quran emphasizes a very noble concept about prophets, that all prophets are one brotherhood in faith, and that their essential message was essentially the same, and that what we see today by way of variations or religions in the plural is not really the responsibility of those prophets. It is the responsibility of those after them, who either deviated from what these prophets taught, forgot part of their teaching, or mispresented or misinterpreted their message. In some cases, even some people with vested interest might have concealed the truth from the people. In some cases, it might have simply been the notion of mixing the pristine and pure message of those prophets with the ideas and interpretation of humans, even with good intention. The Quran then presents its message not really as something competing with what was revealed to Moses or Jesus, not negating the essential truth revealed to them, but in fact restoring that essential truth to its original and pristine form, completing it. It teaches that those prophets were neither sinners, as some people might perceive of them committing highest crimes and still claim to be prophets. So, nor does it go to the other extreme of deifying or worshipping those prophets. It provides a clear explanation of what people usually refer to as miracles that these prophets performed, mm-hmm. and showing again that those miracles were not of the power of those prophets. Mm-hmm. Each prophet had a different miracle. The prophet Moses had great miracles, similar to the great miracles that God gave to prophet Jesus. But the notion of the miracle is that it is by the power of the Creator of those prophets, not in their own individual power. Indicating again that these miracles, stunning as it may be, or as they might have been, do not really constitute the core and the essence of the mission of those prophets, but to establish an evidence against those skeptics. And we have said that we have, from the analysis of the Quran, it is the greatest and permanent miracle, really, that shows the genuineness of the mission of the last prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. To put it really in a nutshell, we can say that the Quran invites all mankind to a real religious unity, a unity on the basis of the firm, pristine, undistorted, unadulterated revelation of the Creator, which is both authoritative and authentic at the same time. It invites all mankind to rise above the narrow concerns and interests of religions in plural, and remind people that there's only one way of life that God has ordained and has revealed to all of these prophets throughout history, as the Quran put it. That is the way of submission, as perfected through the last prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
One of the main issues facing any religion, or philosophy for that matter, is the nature of the human and his or her relationship to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What's the Quran offer with respect to that?
How does it differ from?
How does it differ?
Well, the basic difference that one is really struck with when he read the Quran is you can see exactly the kind of balance, the kind of reasonable approach it takes about explaining the human nature vis-a-vis ideas that existed in previous religions or philosophies, or still exist even until today. The Quran does not present the human as an ascending animal or a descending angel, but as a being who combines three elements. The material element, which is not neglected. There is no hang-up in Islam about satisfying basic human physical needs in the proper way, of course, proper channel. So it does not neglect that or demand from people to go to monasteries or to reject or negate a human living. It approaches the human also as an intellectual being does not require the human to accept any belief or dogma which is impossible. Yes, there are things that exceed our human ability and understanding. But even in the most delicate areas like belief in the Creator, we find that the Quran always gives the logical, rational reasons or evidence to believe in Allah in terms of His creation and so on. So it does not neglect also the mental aspiration or regard faith as blind, as ideally something which is absurd and can never be understood. It asks people to understand and believe in something which still can they can relate to by their innate nature, pure nature that Allah has created in them. It deals with the human also as a spiritual being, but harmonize all of these three elements together, and that is the secret of the challenge for human living, is to combine and harmonize all these levels. In explaining the nature of the human, we find that the Quran does not ignore the existence of evil and sin in the world, but as indicated in previous programs, there is no notion of original sin. There is no notion that we inherit the sin that is brought to this world by one man. There's no such notion. It shows again the way to overcome sin, which is direct repentance and asking for forgiveness from the Creator. It indicates that human existence on this earth is not simply because of that sin, but that we are created in order to fulfill certain responsibility, to be the trustees of Allah on earth, that we are stewards or trustees. It emphasizes knowledge and considers seeking of knowledge in all areas, including the various scientific aspects, as an act of worship. It teaches the human how to utilize the resources available in the universe and use it wisely. It teaches kindness even to animals. It teaches how a person should preserve the environment and not to be wasteful. The Quran always speaks against wastefulness. And as such, the notions that we see in the Quran, which reflect its divine origin, gives a new meaning, a new taste to human living on this earth. It gives the person a sense of direction as to how one can conduct his or her life in accordance and harmony with the will of the Creator. It indicates clearly again that the resurrection and punishment and reward are real. The Quran speaks about the various pictures and scenes in the Day of Judgment, not as merely a spiritual living which is vague and unclear, not necessarily considering death as an end in itself, but it makes the individual conception and expectation of life hereafter as a real one, not just an imagination, and as such provides a motive to do the good and to avoid the evil and try to conduct his or her life in accordance with the will of the Creator. Again, no human being can come up with all this novel concept together in this delicate balance that strikes a chord with the human heart. And that shows the source of the Quran also.
Mm-hmm. I think it's generally accepted and known that all revelations emphasize the moral aspect in life. What makes the Quranic explanation a perfect one?
Well, for one, the Quran does not present moral teaching as a sort of means of achieving individual improvement or development, but considers the doing of good, وَفَعَلُوا الْخَيْرَ, as the Quran put it, like in Surah 22, that doing good in itself in the society is actually one aspect of worship as much as the person bows down in humility to worship the Creator. For that reason, you find that the Quran emphasizes or base its moral structure or teaching on the notion of moral consciousness of the human. That is, the innate, pure feeling and nature within the human that God has inculcated in him in the first place when the human was created. For example, regardless again of place or time, we find all human beings hate certain virtues and appreciate certain virtues. Sorry, hate certain vices and appreciate certain virtues. This is something that again is not much related, may not even be based on any specific religious teaching, but it's something which is ingrained in the human nature. And that's what the Quran capitalizes upon. For example, when the Quran uses the term of ma'aruf and munkar, things which are customarily known as decent and correct, things that are known to be evil and improper, the Quran also presents these moral virtues, and that's something also of the universality of the teaching of the Quran, that all of these moral virtues constituted actually the basic mission of all prophets prior to Prophet Muhammad, the last one, peace be upon them all, like Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, and so on, the Israelite prophets. Furthermore, we find that the Quran ties between the punishment and reward, and as such provide for a sense of justice that will be done after all. So on one hand, it does not say, like some say, that there is no resurrection and no reward, and that the hereafter is only something that will take place in this life during our lifetime, because that leads to greed. It loosens the moral control and moral consciousness of the individual, because after all, punishment and reward is here. On the other hand, it does not consider death, as mentioned before, as the punishment in itself, but rather we find there is a connection between moral and social responsibility and the punishment and reward in the hereafter. And that, of course, is consistent with the divine law of not equating good and evil, of not equating those who work hard and those who just do evil and do not fulfill their responsibilities. From the practical standpoint, the Quran renewed what people have misunderstood about the teaching of previous prophets. Just to give one quick example, the notion of justice versus love. On one hand, we find that the Old Testament teaching emphasized more the question of justice, an eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. On the other hand, if you look into the New Testament, you find a clear message of love and turning the other cheek. The Quran makes it clear that this interpretation has been extreme, and there is no contradiction at all between the mission or message given to Moses or Jesus, because justice is there and must be done where love and forgiveness would not work. Again, when love and forgiveness can operate in a given situation, it should be the one to use. It simply means that Jesus and Moses were not really teaching something different. The Quran put them both in perspective. Yes, the Quran says there is room for justice, but there is also room for forgiveness, allowing also for assessment as to which one could be more effective and beneficial to the person and society at large. So this is a correction, if you will, in the misunderstanding of moral teachings of previous prophets. The Quran did not present moral virtues just as a block of listing of 1, 2, 3 type of commandments or something like that, but we find that it is presented throughout the entire Quran, connected with all aspects of human living, to show again that moral teaching is something which is interspersed, spread throughout all its teaching, rather than just one chapter in human life and you move from there and practice something different in other aspects of life. They're all interrelated. In fact, you can say that the Quran or the moral teaching is a basic theme in all social, economic, and political activities on all levels.
Well, what do you mean by levels? Can you develop that point just a little bit further?
By levels, perhaps one way of looking at it, so we can speak about the individual level, for example. Right. That is to speak about the personal moral virtue, for example. That could be one aspect. For example, we find the Quran combine between the reward in this life and the reward in the hereafter as a result or consequence of moral behavior, and considered as the main motive to comply or to follow or abide by those principles is the pursuit of the pleasure of Allah, good intention that one is seeking truth as an absolute truth, not necessarily because it serves one particular contingency that the person is thinking about. To do something really for the sake of Allah, as the Quran emphasizes in numerous surahs. on the level of relationship between individuals, we find again, as one scholar put it, that the Torah and the Injil or revelation given to Moses and Jesus represent perhaps like the branches of the tree of virtue. And with the Quran, watered with the Quran, that tree will give fruit. Mm-hmm. So there is a complementarity and bringing to fruition, if you will, all this moral teaching that other prophets have taught throughout history. In addition to this virtue on the individual level, you talk also about the social level in general. For example, in the past, we find that there have been some kind of barrier between the, like, let's say, Jew and Gentile. They have been sort of, you know, like lending with interest to the non-Jew, but for the Jew, you shouldn't lend with interest. There have been sort of concern about protection of one particular group of people. And the same thing applies to other teaching, not only the question of lending. With the mission of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, we find that this barrier that people thought of is dropped. And the Prophet, Prophet Jesus speaks again about loving the person or being peaceful with other people, regardless whether they are of your own clan or not. In other words, you can say that the purpose in the Old Testament was to achieve the social interest in general, not just of one group vis-a-vis the other. Again, you find in the Quran a balance between these two considerations. On one hand, you find that the Quran addresses mankind in general and invite them to one universal and general brotherhood. On the other hand, within the boundaries of this brotherhood, it also emphasizes the protection of the community of the believers without necessarily having a barrier between believers in one particular way of life and others. So it combines and balances those two considerations. And also on the, let's say, on the international level, if you want to look at it this way, you find again it organizes the law of morality as it deals with these universal issues. So what I'm saying basically is that the moral teaching does not only just look at one narrow aspect, but looks at the individual, interrelationship, inter-society, and relationship between societies in the more universal level.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have a lot of time remaining in today's program, but perhaps I could ask you to just in a summary way examine the topic from another angle, and that is the Quran is the basis for a complete way of life, perhaps commenting on from a social aspect and maybe economic and other ways, if we time permitting.
Sure. To say that in a very, very capsulized way, and I give you a reference immediately after I finish this, from the social standpoint, we find, for example, the program for freeing those who were in bondage, the emphasis on the social responsibility of human beings, the emphasis in the Quran about social justice and charity through various means. Some are compulsory, some are optional. The emphasis in the family, on the family as the cornerstone of any healthy society, and restoring the dignity of women, and we have discussed that in some detail in the social system of Islam previous series. In the economic level, the emphasis again on encouraging people to be productive on one hand and to satisfy their need and instinctive desire to have property, on the other hand, to keep that within the boundaries of social concern. In the political side, to emphasize the concept of shura, or mutual consultation. So there is no theocracy, there is no monarchy, there is no dictatorship, according to what Islam really teaches, not what some people may be doing. And all of that, again, is put in such a way that allows people to participate, guarantees basic freedoms, respect the rights of non-Muslim minorities. And all of these issues pertaining to politics, as you might recall, were covered in the political system in Islam, a whole series on that. You look at it even from the standpoint of the impact of the Quran in history and how it totally transformed the lives, not only of the immediate recipients of the message, the Arabs, but how it changed the whole world and occupied its due place as the universal faith of Allah. That itself could suffice to indicate and clarify that there is no other book in human history, religious or otherwise, that contains as noble and as perfect principle as that last revelation of Allah. No book in history has ever produced and changed so many millions or billions of people through hundreds and hundreds of years as the Quran did. And that itself is also a manifestation that its source transcends any human ability and thinking, that it is a divine source.
Well, thank you, Brother Jamal. I wish we had time to explore the last points a little bit in a little more detail. But one, perhaps we might just ask you in the very few seconds that we have left, if you perhaps just give our viewers a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what we might expect next in our series.
In this 32 programs, we have been dealing mainly with the authority of the Quran to prove clearly that it came from Allah and not authored by any human. But the next question, how do we know that it came to us without any change or aberration? So that would be the next part of the discussion of that series.
Hopefully. Look forward to God willing next week to examining that topic. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.